This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, D-Aliens. This is Miraz, your executive producer of the DA Show. Yeah, I'm going to say sidekick on the DA Show, and we all know the king of all work ethic. This right here, this is the best of today's DA Show. Listen up.
But let us begin in the NFC South, because just a couple of days ago, Matt Ryan made news. A couple of days ago, Matt Ryan was asked who the best quarterback in the NFC South is. Now, the NFC South, of course, has now two future Hall of Famers in it, and who knows about Matt Ryan, where he ends up in his career. But with Tom Brady heading to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Drew Brees still in New Orleans, and Teddy Bridgewater now signing a big deal in Carolina, there's some real steady, rock-solid quarterback play in that division. I think it's inarguable that the best division in football for quarterbacking is the NFC South. No other division has two future Hall of Famers in it that are still as effective as Brady and Brees, and add on top of that another Super Bowl quarterback and former NFL MVP in Matt Ryan. But the Falcons and Matt Ryan, of course, have never won a Super Bowl. Matt Ryan had a 28-3 lead in the third quarter of a Super Bowl. I'm sure Falcons fans would prefer me not bring this up, but that was the peak, the apex so far of Ryan's career. He was the MVP that year. They were the number one seed. They went all the way to the Super Bowl and held that extraordinary lead in the third quarter, of which we know they blew it. But when you look at this, Matt Ryan's caught a lot of heat for this suggestion. But is there some truth there? Because, look, Tom Brady's 43 years old, and you have Drew Brees already in his 40s as well. And Brady showed some wear and tear on him, certainly by the end of last season and into the postseason loss against the Tennessee Titans. Drew Brees, this could be the end, his final year. And Brees last year was injured, and they lost that wild card game at home to the Minnesota Vikings. And Teddy Bridgewater, in his place, was phenomenal last year for the Saints. Is Matt Ryan on an island? Is he delusional, or is he the best quarterback in the NFC South? Wait, what? It is where we begin your cold open.
First and goal at the 9. Here's Ryan, play fake to Freeman. Matt going to flip it out in the flat. Here's Ridley. Cuts back at the 5, drives to the end zone for the touchdown.
Would you say you're the best quarterback in the NFC South?
I think currently, yeah. I'll go with myself.
Yes. There's-
the most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That was Matt Ryan on Pardon My Take. Now, let's face it. At that point in time, it's kind of hard for Matt Ryan not to say, yeah, I'm the best, because he's asked, are you the best quarterback in the NFC South? And if he says, no. Yeah, it comes off a deferential maybe to one of the two Hall of Famers, but it also kind of doesn't elicit a lot of support, I'm sure, from his teammate, and you want to have that confidence. It's a great question directed towards Matt Ryan. There's no way to kind of snake your way out of that with a politically correct answer. But let's actually break this down. Is Matt Ryan the best quarterback in the NFC South? I would say no. If I'm ranking the four quarterbacks right now, I'm sorry, Teddy Bridgewater, as great as your season was last season. And let's face it, you couldn't really ask for much more from Bridgewater in those games that he started in place of Drew Brees. Bridgewater's going to be number four on this list. So Bridgewater is at number four. If I'm looking at where Matt Ryan sits, it's either two or three, and it depends on what you value. For me, I'm going to put him at two, and here's why. Incredibly, Tom Brady, to me, as effective as he still was last year, and obviously he was effective, Brady showed signs of a deteriorating arm. And there's a lot of Brady sycophants that don't want to hear this. There's a lot of people that love Brady so much, they absolutely don't want to admit that Brady last year took a step back, but he did. And the Patriots' record didn't necessarily show that. But if you watched closely the games in which Brady lost last year, and the Patriots lost to some of their better opponents, the division leaders like the Texans, like the Chiefs, you saw pretty consistently against the best competition that Tom Brady was not able, with his lack of arm strength, to create big plays downfield and make sure that that offense consistently moved. Good defenses, good pass rushes, and good teams really made Brady look old, and the Titans did that exact thing in the divisional round of the wild card round as well. So I'm putting Brady at number three, which is no terrible shakes considering he's 43 years old, but I'm putting him at number three. I'm putting Matt Ryan at number two. Ryan's season last year statistically was fine, and he's been a top 10 QBR quarterback for a number of years now. But there was a lot of games last year early in the season where Matt Ryan did not do enough to help his team win and had some bad losses. Remember that with Matt Ryan at the helm, the Atlanta Falcons began the season 3-8. 3-8. And when you look at some of the wins that they had at 3-8, it was not exactly the best foes. They beat an Eagles team early that would end up skidding through the entire season. They beat a Panthers team with Kyle Allen as the starting quarterback last season with those 3-8 starts. So Matt Ryan, while statistically was fine last year, the time when he really turned it on late was when the season was basically over. But Ryan's at least still in his prime, and I still think has a couple of really good seasons left in him. I think the best quarterback in the NFC South right now is actually Drew Brees. And I know that he's older, and I know that he was injured last year. But when you look at Brees' season last year, if people only focus on the wild card loss against the Vikings, where he was not good, okay, that was a bad final taste in the mouth of everybody. Brees was fantastic. Drew Brees, at his age, in just 11 games, threw for 3,000 yards, went 8-3, had 27 touchdowns against 4 interceptions. I mean, again, he had 11 starts last year because he lost that time due to injury, but went 27-4. Touchdown to interception ratio, had a QB rating of 116, went 8-3 and threw for 3,000 yards. Had he played a full season, that would have been 5 more games last year. He easily would have crossed 4,000 yards and probably would have had somewhere around 37 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Drew Brees ended last season in not good fashion, but Brees' year overall was incredible. And who knows what it's going to be a year older, but I can't doubt him because he did it again last year. Brees is the best quarterback in that very quarterback-heavy division. If we get the NFL this year, NFC South is going to be fantastic to watch. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Matt Ryan says that he's the best quarterback in the division. Is he? I think he's number two. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Mraz, how would you rank the NFC South quarterbacks?
I'd love to disagree with you, DA, but I'm going to be in lockstep. I would go Breeze 1 as well. However, I would say that's two straight years I've seen Breeze towards the end of the year start to show his age quite a bit. So I am very concerned going into this year what we will see. We saw that last year with Tom Brady. That was the secret that it seems like only you and I want to talk about throughout this offseason, is that Tom Brady did not look like the Tom Brady, and that was, by the way, finally expected to be. So I obviously would put him 3. And for Matt Ryan, I think this is a pretty easy exercise. We spent the first couple days of this week talking about Cam Newton, and there were plenty of people on social media who kept harping on, yeah, but Cam Newton was an MVP a couple years ago. If Cam Newton's that kind of guy, the Patriots are going to be great. But yet, so a lot of those same people are probably laughing at the fact that Matt Ryan wants to call himself the best quarterback in that division. Well, what if Matt Ryan can revert back to the MVP quarterback he was? It would not shock me if we finished this year with Matt Ryan having a better year than Drew Brees or Tom Brady, just by the fact that those guys are much older, and we know that Matt Ryan's capable of doing that. I think Matt Ryan has been bogged down in a very bad coaching staff behind Dan Quinn, in my opinion. Very overrated situation. I think he still has way more left in the tank than those other two guys, so I think that number two spot behind Brees, ahead of Brady, is the perfect sweet spot for him entering the season.
And it would have been nice to see what Ryan could have done with Kyle Shanahan for more years.
Right.
I mean, that year that they went to the Super Bowl, Shanahan had that offense absolutely humming, and Ryan was the perfect quarterback with all of those weapons. And once Shanahan left, even though he had a lot of weapons, Ryan hasn't been as effective as that year. Had the Falcons held on to that lead in that Super Bowl, how much differently do you think we would be thinking about and talking about Matt Ryan?
He's in a Hall of Fame slam dunk.
He's a slam dunk Hall of Famer.
Because if you actually look at where he's, and I know that the passing era has completely changed, a lot of his numbers, whether it's yardage, touchdowns, and where he projects, he's going to be right there with the Eli's, Roethlisberger's, and Rivers when all is said and done. If he's not already there now, and he probably is to some extent, yes, I think if he wins a Super Bowl and he'd beaten the Patriots, slayed the Patriots, there's no doubt in my mind we would be thinking about Matt Ryan already as being somebody who's punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame.
You know, it's funny, we have a couple of slam dunk Hall of Famers that have only one Super Bowl ring, Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees. And those guys, their careers to a large degree are considered complete because they have that Super Bowl. Of course, Drew Brees has done this incredibly effectively for a really long time. And Aaron Rodgers has been just extraordinary for a long time as well. But we don't look at those guys kind of like, oh, yeah, but, because they have that ring. And while Matt Ryan might not give you the gasps that Aaron Rodgers have been able to, and might not have this kind of really long career of superhuman numbers like Drew Brees, you know, it would only be holding on to one fourth quarter lead for Matt Ryan to be in a completely different conversation for most NFL fans, you know?
Yeah, or not throwing themselves at a field goal range late even after they blew it. But nonetheless, that whole era of Matt Ryan could be different. And by the way, I don't think the story's done with Matt Ryan. Again, I would question how long you're holding on to Dan Quinn and company. But Matt Ryan for the next 5 years, you never know, man. The NFL's a funny game, and if the NFL is ever going to be the funniest, it's going to be in 2020. So I wouldn't sleep on Matt Ryan or the Falcons. This would be one of those situations with a lot of talent. You still just never know.
I wouldn't either, and I always bang the drum on this. The Atlanta Falcons annually are my most frustrating team because they every single season come into the league with some of the best talent in the NFC and some of the best talent in the NFL. They have drafted remarkably well. They develop remarkably well. They've got a really smart front office, and they consistently fall short of going deep into the postseason. But they always have weapons around him. They play indoors. They've got an offense that on some nights you just go, wow, you know, how do you stop all of those different options? So I agree. I don't think the book is over and written on Matt Ryan. It's funny, though, that I think when Matt Ryan says I'm the best quarterback in the division with Drew Brees and Tom Brady, people just start laughing. And they wouldn't really laugh had he just held on to a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Come one, come all, step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
Last year on July the 1st, the Knicks once again struck out at all of the big free agents. Why? James Dolan tried to play the kazoo. Here's the clip. If Jim Dolan's dad didn't create basically cable in the Northeast, Jim Dolan would be your server at Applebee's. And he'd probably screw that up.
When you dine with the president, he only eats the meat.
He's born into a billionaire household, owns two professional franchises and Madison Square Garden, and plays in a band, but doesn't just play any instrument. He can't play the guitar. He can't play the drums. This man plays the kazoo. That's James Dolan, owner of the Knicks, in his JD and the Straight Shot band, singing a song about what you order when you dine with the president.
Rack of lamb, country ham, hold the broccoli, please.
Be careful what you eat, and then playing the kazoo. Do you think NBA agents, free agents, players, coaches, anybody, walks into a room with that guy and goes, oh yeah, we're going to win here?
If you have lunch with the president, be careful what you eat.
Instead of go New York, go New York, go, Madison Square Garden's introductions and hype song should just be the kazoo. A blithering idiot, and he's mean on top of it.
That's not nice.
He's an idiot, and he's mean and insecure.
You're using low journalism. That's not nice.
He only eats the meat.
Would you go work for that guy?
If you're Bobby Portis, yep.
It is truly amazing. What a blithering idiot owns the Knicks, the Rangers, and Madison Square Garden. Really. I mean, he's honestly a blithering idiot. And look, I can deal with dumb people. I think we all can. We all do. But you can't be mean on top of being a blithering idiot. You know, that combination does not work. If you're really stupid and are devoid of talent, and you can't really contribute to the family, your job, or society at whole, at least be nice. If you're nice, everything is just forgiven. If you're polite and you're nice and you don't have an ego, everything else is fine. We can deal with a world full of nice, dumb people. That's fine. It's when the dumb people are really mean. And that's James Dolan. That's what's so unbelievably incredible about him. He's got no discernible value here. I mean, he just, what's the part where you go, yeah, but he inherited all of his millions and billions. He has no ability to actually be successful at the job that he's been handed. He basically buys his friends because nobody wants to hang out with him. He's not smart, he's not funny, and he's not nice. It's a disastrous combination. Just a disaster. Just an absolute disaster.
Roll tape.
Because there's no flying in baseball. There's no flying in baseball. No flying.
So what I do is I start tackling the quarterback, unless he get the ball to somebody else, in which case I'll try to tackle that person.
Say hey! Willie Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays, and I run like Hayes. How you doing?
The greatest sports movies with the greatest sports minds. Kinda.
Either we heal now as a team,
or we will die as individuals.
Get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn ready with a DA show.
A couple of weeks ago, we also did A League of Their Own. That was a phenomenal sports movie. And this one was kind of perfect for 4th of July week because it's about playing baseball with your friends in the summer. There's a 4th of July scene. So kind of perfect for this week. Basically, the backdrop is a young man in, I think, 4th grade or 5th grade. He's 10 years old, named Smalls, moves into a new neighborhood. He's got a new stepdad. He's kind of uncomfortable asking his stepdad baseball questions. His dad is a big baseball fan. Smalls wants to be part of something. Seemingly he loves baseball, but doesn't know how to play, doesn't know the history of the game, and is looking to make new friends. He's adopted by the kids of the neighborhood that play sandlot baseball every single day throughout the summer. And this is the story of their summer. And then the big scene is they need a baseball. Smalls goes home and gets his stepdad's historic Babe Ruth signed baseball. They use it. Smalls hits it over the fence into the yard of a killer dog, and they've got to try to retrieve the historic baseball back. So, Mraz, let's start here. I mean, what's the deal with Smalls here? The kid, he's already 10 years old. He doesn't know how to throw. He doesn't know how to catch. He doesn't know who Babe Ruth is, and he doesn't even know where left field is. How could I take seriously Smalls that he wants to play baseball? He's so excited to play baseball. How come he doesn't know how to do anything, and yet he thinks he likes baseball?
Well, this part was very confusing to me. So obviously you feel bad for Smalls, his biological father, not with him anymore. Now he's down to his stepfather, who seemingly is a baseball junkie. I mean, he's got pennants of every team hung up. He's got Babe Ruth signed baseballs. And he waits until he's 10 years old, when this guy's been around for basically 8 years of his life, to finally have a catch with him. And all he has is a plastic mitt that his grandmother got him. And he knows all about who's leading the Dodgers and stolen bases. So how could you, just by watching the sport, own a plastic mitt, even if you don't have somebody having a catch with you, how can you not figure out some kind of coordination here? But I do give Smalls credit in the fact that, you know what? He at least wants to learn. He's very into science. He's very into kind of nerding out. He's got his erector set. But he still wants to break away from that, get dirty, be a kid, play some baseball. So I give him credit, but it is a little mind-numbing that he can't figure out one thing. Not even a guy that smart can't figure out what left center is. That's a little disturbing.
Yeah, doesn't know where left field is on the baseball diamond, yet claims that he is a baseball fan. And 10 years old isn't 5 years old. You've never thrown a baseball? I mean, look, I don't know. I was annoyed by Smalls for almost the entire set, the entire movie here. But they go to play catch in the outfield. They go to play catch in the yard. Dennis Leary plays his stepdad. He doesn't know how to catch. He's never basically played catch with anybody in his life. They go out to the yard, and ultimately, Dennis Leary throws a ball that hits him in the eye and gives him a bloody eye, a black eye. Bogues, you've got two kids. Dennis Leary admits he threw a curveball. If you were playing baseball with a young person that had never caught a baseball before, would you throw a curve? Is this a terrible decision by Dennis Leary?
It's a terrible decision. I don't think I've thrown a ball overhand to my kids yet. Everything has been underhand or a grounder or like put your glove out to the side.
He throws a curve.
Yeah, I'll throw it at their gloves. I can try and catch without any kind of danger. The one mistake I have made is throwing like a mini pop-up to my daughter who missed it and it landed on the top of her head, which is not a great moment. But that was like on catch session number 74, not number one, where he's out there throwing heaters and curveballs at this poor kid who doesn't even know where to put his glove to catch the ball. It was not good fathering at all early in this movie from Dennis Leary.
Yeah, it's a brutal job by being a stepdad here. He's making no connection with his son. He's blowing him off. He's throwing curveballs in the yard to a kid that has never caught before. You know, look, I hate to break it to you, stepdad, but it is your responsibility to get Smalls up to speed here. If he's 10 years old and he's never caught a baseball before, it's your fault. That's just bad. That's bad parenting. It's really awful
Across
parenting.
Across the board, D.A., he doesn't know what s'mores are. So the entire unit has let this poor kid down for 10 years.
And this is why Smalls really is brutal in this film. Mraz, you know, I thought about you here. They're in the treehouse. You know, the great Hambino is making s'mores, and Smalls doesn't know what a s'more is. Now, you don't have to know who Babe Ruth is, catching a baseball, what have you. How could a 10-year-old not know what a s'mores is? Isn't that just a terrible, terrible moment for him?
Well, D.A., if you don't know who Babe Ruth is, who might be the biggest celebrity on the planet that you should know about historically, 1962, as a young boy who loves baseball, I can't expect you, father and mother, to have been outside with campfires teaching you how to roast a marshmallow either. So when your basis is you don't know who Babe Ruth is, I can't expect you to know what a s'more is. I would also say that's a tough way to learn a s'more for the first time. I think you got to learn a s'more over a real fire, not basically over candlelight indoors inside a treehouse. So, look, if you are going to learn what a s'more is for the first time at 10 years old, who better to teach you than the great Hambino, than Elton Hamilton Porter? But I can't crush him for not knowing what a s'more is when he has his entire basis of knowing things is so out the window. I don't know what his, forget his father, what his mother has been teaching him.
Ham Porter is an amazing young man, okay? This is a guy that calls his shot. He hits the home run. He loses the ball, takes a victory lap. He trash talks everybody as the catcher when they're up at the plate. 4th of July, to get a quick bite, he runs outside, grabs the hot dog with one hand, throws the condiments on that hot dog with the other hand, and just smashes his face full of it. I mean, he's an amazing young man. But I got one problem with Porter. He calls marshmallow mallow. And I didn't like that. He puts the marshmallow on the stick, roasted over the candle in the treehouse, and says, you put the graham, and then you put the chocolate, and then put your mallow on top of the chocolate, and put the graham back on. And I'm like, come on, Mraz, nobody calls marshmallow mallow.
I certainly don't, but I also, D.A., understanding my historical problems, whether it be the Magna Carta where Michael Jackson's from,
sure.
I personally interpreted that as in 1962 in California on the West Coast, that was a West Coast twang of calling a marshmallow a mallow. If you mean to tell me you way more educated than me are telling me that that was never a thing, then I do have more of a problem with it.
I think mallow comes in the jar, right, Bogues? That there's like... there's the mallow fluff. Like, fluff is, I think, just mallow, but a marshmallow is actually in that shape of the marshmallow, and that's what he was roasting. I don't think it was fluff out of a jar. He was roasting a marshmallow.
Yeah, I have to, you know, I don't know the history of marshmallows. My thought was mallow was something, was a brand name, like we say Kleenex instead of tissue.
There's Malamars, the cookies, the Malamar.
Yeah. Right, I mean, so he had, but he had a marshmallow. They're called marshmallows. So I don't know where that came from, but it, that definitely caught my ear. Also, he goes with s'mores. I've always done s'mores, like
sure.
Really crunching it together. He goes s'mores, which is another thing. I don't know if I hold it against him. Maybe it was just 1962 California, but there was a lot of language issues in that one scene.
Now, they go to the pool, and this is where Squints fakes a drowning so that the hot chick who is the lifeguard, Wendy Peppercorn, can save him and give him mouth-to-mouth, who he ends up basically French kissing while he's acting like he's dead. Unbelievable move by Squints. We end up finding out that he ends up married to Wendy with 9 kids, so a huge win for Squints. But it gets them banned from the pool, not only for the day, not only for the week, not for the month, not for the summer, but forever. Guys, are you okay with Squints getting the entire crew banned from the pool forever?
No, and honestly, I think all of those guys, Hams, Smalls, they'd all win this battle in court. If I was me, and you know me in the foxhole, I am back at that pool the next morning before I'm due back at the sandlot, and speaking to everybody involved in the pool and go, look, that was not me. He might be my friend. I love coming to this pool. I won't hang out with him ever again if it means I could be in the pool. So I absolutely would throw Squints under the bus. There's no way you're banning me from the pool. And by the way, I don't even benefit because you're getting the hot lifeguard anyway. It's a terrible job by him as a friend to get them all banned. I would also question that scene specifically. How the people running the pool knew their exact clothes and to throw them at them as they're being chased away, that seemed like some trickle. I mean, so quickly, word got there when there's no text messages yet to throw those clothes out the window. I think, honestly, they should have found who was throwing that. That could have been their second pitcher because all they did was have the one pitcher.
That's a really good point. You know, all of their clothes are thrown out of this kind of bathhouse so that they can grab them on their way out. But look, there's an accomplice here because they know whose clothes and who was part of this crew that tried to French kiss Wendy Peppercorn. Let me also ask you this here, guys. As I said, I love Ham Porter. I think Ham Porter is one of the great characters in baseball history. I would take him behind the plate any day of the week in my Sandlot baseball team. But he's living in California. It's 1962. It's the Sandy Koufax Dodgers years. We see one of the kids is wearing an Angels hat as well. I mean, they're Southern California kids. Hambino's wearing a Yankees cap. Guys, is he a traitor? I mean, is he a bad fan? He's wearing a Yankees cap in Los Angeles in the early 60s?
I mean, Bogus, I'm sure you're going to go the same way as me. I think that's all about Babe Ruth. His idol was Babe Ruth. And much like you'd see a kid wearing a LeBron Cavs jersey growing up in Boston or New York or L.A. Huh. Now, I think that you have a situation where I'm assuming Ham Porter's parents, not as big a Dodger Angel fans, he managed to teach himself how to play catch, and he just followed the great Babe Ruth, and that was going to be his team and his legacy was being a Yankee fan. I would argue he probably didn't have the MLB extra innings package back in 1962, so I don't know how big a fan he could have been. But, yeah, I would go probably because of the legend of Babe Ruth.
Now, there's one night game a summer. And it's in air quotes. The night game happens at the 4th of July because there's no light to the Sandlot, but they can play underneath the light of the fireworks. I got a tough time calling this a night game here, guys. I mean, we know that fireworks go off for maybe 20 minutes. If you're lucky, it's a 30-minute fireworks show. You're not getting much more than that. They don't really have light to play an entire game. They've got light to play for a half hour. So, I don't know. I know they call it a night game. Small says there's one night game a summer. You know, folks, I just got a tough time calling it a night game. That's not really that accurate there.
No, I mean, and I don't want to nitpick kids living the dream one summer, but and the two or three times that I played under the lights growing up, it was an amazing experience. So, like, I want them to feel that. But that was my same thought, too. Is like, and my neighborhood now is like a war zone on the 4th of July. There are fireworks going off the second it's dark enough for hours from all different areas. There's still no way that we have the ability to play a baseball game, especially stand in left field and know what's going on at the plate or follow ball anywhere. So they can have their fun. But they're asking for trouble because it's not light enough to get out there. That's right for somebody getting hurt, hit by a line drive or something, because they certainly can't see well enough thanks to some fireworks.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if your local town looks like Baghdad lit up in the sky with fireworks. You can't play a game under those fireworks.
Yeah, and how about just enjoy the fireworks? You play baseball every single day. You're up early. The summer's hot. I don't think you need the night game there. I think the schedule is conducive for them on the Sandlot to just play daytime baseball. You know, we argue this point with baseball today and coming up with the schedule that's soon to be released, that we need more day games for the kids. I think you have a lot of young Rob Manfreds there that just don't get it. You didn't need the firework night game. You're not allowing kids. I mean, are any kids, if that was the majors, any kids watching or the kids outside watching the fireworks? It's a problem. They're not being visionary enough. They think they're being visionary. They're not. What you see there might be setting the standard for what's wrong with baseball here all these decades later, and it all started with them wanting to play that night game on the 4th of July.
So Benny ends up on the 4th of July night hitting a home run, which, of course, always ends the game. They're seemingly very happy about when Benny hits home runs, but it ruins the game. So they go out there for a couple of minutes. He smashes a home run. Night is over. Okay, kids, everybody go home. There's no more baseballs to be had. My next question is, they run into basically their rivals, the Rose Park Tigers, and the Tigers are in uniform. And I'm wondering, are the Rose Park Tigers always in uniform? Because not only do they roll up on the Sandlot kids in uniform on their bikes and they go into that kind of trash-talking scene, but when they play the Rose Park Tigers the next day, or later that day, I don't know,
the next day,
they're also in uniform, whereas the Sandlot kids are just wearing, you know, button downs, polos. I mean, they are a ragtag group. Some jean shorts are in there, full length jeans. So, Mraz, are the Rose Park Tigers always in uniform, even during exhibition against the Sandlot kids?
Yeah, it seems like they should be having other clothes. You had a problem with clothing all over the place. I have a problem playing baseball in jeans to begin with if you're the Sandlot kids.
I sure do, too.
But really, my takeaway with the Rose Park Tigers is, number one, for a team that wants to roll up on bikes and talk smack to the Sandlot team, they're not that good when they get crushed the following day. And number two, are we to interpret this that these kids playing Sandlot baseball, including Benny the Jet, who later finds his way to the major leagues, parents don't sign them up to play in whatever league the Rose Park Tigers are in? Their only form of baseball is not organized. It's organized by Benny the Jet Rodriguez. I mean, Yaya is certainly good enough to play short. We have a pitcher that eventually makes Triple-A who's certainly good enough to twirl on the mound. I mean, the great Hambino's a great power hitter, has more power than anybody on that Tiger team, and nobody's parents picked up a permission slip to sign him to maybe go compete. They should be the Rose Park Tigers.
Yeah, that was my thought, too. Like, how downtrodden are we supposed to think these Sandlot kids are? They're scrounging for baseballs daily. They're playing at this field, and they're clearly, and then are they not in Little League? Is Little League over? Because even when they go to this other field, it's an actual field with a real fence. There's signage on the fence for a little, you know, why are these kids just off in this dirt lot doing nothing? Can they not afford Little League? It made me sad.
A Ford also, Little League. Benny the Jet's got multiple mitts. He's got multiple hats.
Right. He's a sporting goods store.
Benny the Jet seems like he's loaded, and his parents know he's this great. He can't sign up and go play left for the Roseland Park Tigers. I got a major issue.
But are they loaded? I mean, they're scrounging for bottles to get 98 cents to buy a new baseball.
It's expensive in 1962 for a baseball, by the way. You want kids to get in the game, maybe make the sport a little more affordable for kids to play.
Well, I got a problem with their parents.
They find a dollar every day, D.A.
Their parents need to fund more baseballs. They should not have to end playing a game every single day simply because they only have one baseball. 98 cents. Hey, Bill, stepdad Bill, you're flying to Chicago for a business trip the entire week. Can you throw Smalls a couple of bucks for baseballs?
Which brings me to my next point, DA. You want to talk about Benny the Jet Rodriguez is such a great coach that somehow he could take the 10 years of disaster that's been done with Smalls, tell him to basically just stick your glove out, I'll hit it where it needs to be. Benny the Jet Rodriguez might be the best baseball coach of any of the movies we have done to date. That is how special a talent he is. Yet, they are within an easy enough bike ride of the Roseland Tigers practice facility or game facility, which, if you look in the shot, has plenty of grass and plenty of space, plenty of room for everybody to have fun. Yet these bozos keep showing up to this sandlot where they lose a ball and it's vanished forever because they have a Herculean tiger sitting behind left field. It's a bigger monstrosity than what the Marlins have in the outfield. And you mean to tell me that these kids, nobody ever has the thought, hey, we're having a tough time coming up with 98 cents to buy a baseball. Maybe we want to get our asses on a bike and drive the extra 5-6 minutes to go play on the extra field where the Tigers play so that maybe when somebody hits a home run, we can just, you know, jump over the fence and get the ball. These kids, for as smart a coach as Benny the Jet Rodriguez is, for as, you know, Herculean they are when they try to come up with ways to retrieve the baseball, they don't have the foresight, the wherewithal, anything to realize maybe we need to ride an extra 5 minutes to drive to a field where we don't lose the ball and a game has to be over because Benny the Jet got into one. How ridiculous is that? How stupid are these kids?
It's also a remarkably dangerous place to play.
Yes!
Because there's a broken down Jeep in center field. There's tires. It's a junkyard they're playing in. They're literally playing in a junkyard. I think there's a tree out there in left field.
Yeah, and they built the treehouse up there. Who built the treehouse, by the way? They were able to smart enough to build a treehouse. They can't ride the bike 5 minutes.
It's a bad scene. It's a really bad scene. Part two of Mothership at the Movies coming up here next hour as we get into the ball being retrieved from the beast's backyard.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
It's been a while, so let us say hello again to Florida woman. This particular lady from the Sunshine State wants a paternity test for her goats. Her goats. Chris Hedstrom filed a lawsuit against her neighbor recently over her 5 new Nigerian dwarf goats.
Sure.
She paid $900 for them and wants to register the 5 with the American Dairy Goat Association, which tracks goats' pedigrees. And the paperwork you get from that association increases the resale value of goats. So apparently if your goat has paperwork about where it came from, you can sell it for more if you want to sell it down the road. However, when Hedstrom began tried to get this certification, she was denied because the person that she bought the goats from, her neighbor, Heather Daner, and her farm are not active members of the association. So she needed hair from her goat's baby daddy. So she asked Daner for that, didn't get it, and then relative all hell broke loose in their part of Florida. Daner says that Hedstrom has repeatedly called the police on her trespass on her property. Cops have been out there 3 times already. There was a lull. Maybe things were done. And then this lawsuit happened just a couple of weeks ago. So they are fighting over the family tree of 5 goats in Florida and using both the police and legal system to come to a conclusion on that.
Again, it's the most Florida story ever. Huh. If you live in Florida, these types of things happen all the time with your neighbors. You're like, what? They're fighting over goats? There's trespassing because of goats? There's a paternity test because of goats? Now, to get the paternity test done, She needs 40 follicles of hair from the baby daddy of the goat. And I'm guessing this is why she's been caught trespassing. My guess is she's tried to get onto the farm and find 40 follicles or cut the 40 follicles off of the goat. It shouldn't be that hard to get 40 follicles of hair or fur off of the goat. So I'm wondering why the owner of the goat wouldn't just give it to her. Is she worried that the paternity test is going to say, like Maury Povich, it is, you are the father.
Right. Maybe there's some crossbreeding. They're not full goat. She knows it's going to come out with. But I also would wonder, 40 follicles, a goat's hair, I mean, it's not like straight hair. They are clumped up and it looks like cauliflower all over them. Wouldn't you just need to get one of those chunks? Wouldn't have that have 40 follicles in it?
I don't know. I guess not every goat has...
Are you thinking of a sheep, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Like a sheep has the curly wool. Like a goat just has, you know, fur.
Maybe I didn't realize goats and sheep were different. I kind of just thought they were the same thing.
Shocking.
It's probable.
All right. And also, I would just say, you know, as everybody basically wants to fist fight on Twitter on whether or not, you know, who's to blame for Florida spikes of corona cases and bars being open, you know, not enough credit given to the people trespassing to get goat follicle hairs and not acknowledging social distancing here as well. This is the kind of stuff that's going on in Florida, and while people are questioning the NBA, you have people running on everybody's property trying to snip goat hair off because they need to prove for paperwork. These are the reasons things spread.
It's why DeAndre Jordan's not reporting the bubble.
Totally the goat problem.
Hedstrom bought one of the goats, Margoat, for her friend Penny Vickery of Palm Harbor. Vickery said her goat had lice and worms that required five medications a day. Margoat has made a full recovery, but Vickery doesn't have the paperwork to register her. Quote, I have an amazing, beautiful, pretty little girl, but the vet said she's not sure she's a purebred. I thought I was going to have the option if I wanted to breed her. But maybe I don't. Between the trespassing and constant harassment of the police officer, she's been a nightmare of a neighbor. Could you imagine your neighbor doing this?
Well, you know what they say? Don't get involved in goat sales with neighbors. It'll ruin the entire relationship. There'll be no more block parties. There'll be more barbecues. You never, you want to buy a goat, you do it off the street. You never do it on the same street. That's it's simple etiquette. Never buy a goat from thy neighbor.
You don't goat where you eat.
Fair.
Are goats and sheep related in some way, or am I crazy?
I mean, they might be related in some way that they're both smallish farm animals, but they're like not the same thing.
Like, can a goat, for lack of a better term, mate with a sheep? Like, I think I thought maybe a sheep was a lady version and a goat was a male version.
Are you confusing goats and lambs? Because lambs, I believe, are young sheep.
Yeah.
But goats are a completely separate thing from sheep.
Maybe. That makes sense.
A male sheep is like a ram, like the Los Angeles Rams or the Colorado State Rams. That's a male sheep.
So there's sheeps that are women, rams that are men, and lambs that are kids.
Yes.
Now, may I ask this further question, sir, down this road? We all have had, as James Dolan would say, rack of lamb, country ham, hold the broccoli, please.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me, on Easter or whatever day, when we're having rack of lamb, why aren't we having rack of sheep? Why is it always the kids we're eating and not the adults? Like, why have we never had a nice ram cutlet?
I don't know why we're not eating ram, but I think we're not eating sheep because it might, as they get older, get a little gamey, kind of like veal versus regular beef. Now, regular beef is delicious.
Right, that's what I would say.
I think you can eat sheep. I just don't think it's all that popular of a dish. I think it's relatively gamey.
And we obviously have goat cheese and goat milk, but I guess we don't have sheep cheese and sheep milk?
No, I've never heard of sheep cheese and sheep milk. I don't know if sheep produce milk.
And my mom often told me to wipe my sheepish grin off my face. Is that because of the sheep and what goes on with their mouth, or can a goat smile too? I'm serious, guys.
Does a sheepish grin
have to do with the animal?
I don't know. I don't know if if the adjective sheepish has to do actually with a sheep.
All right.
But I do.
It has to come from sheep.
I do want to know Has your mom said that after the fart story that you have a sheepish grin on your face?
Well, no, she had a sheepish grin when she first confessed to me that she had this. But no, there was several times where growing up I would do something and she would wipe that sheepish grin off your face. And I didn't know what it meant. And I just thought the sheep and the goats were the same things. And now I understand. It's probably the zoo they took me to.
Did she eat sheep before farting? Could that have explained the horrible gas?
There was lamb. No, they were lamb lollipops. I remember that was one of the first times I had lamb. They called them lamb lollies, and they were in the appetizer hour.
When Mraz goes to that Long Island animal farm where he learned about all these animals improperly, it's like, oh, mommy, is that a sheep? No, it's just a goat in a North Face.
Right, that's the other thing. So sheep we use for wool. Right? A sheep in wool's clothing. We've heard that. And now nope. We don't use goat. So we don't use that. the goat for the hair. No, we just use the goat for the milk and the cheese.
Did
so
you say it's a sheep in wolves' clothing?
No, a sheep in wool's clothing. Wool.
Wool.
Yeah.
Oh,
wool.
Got it.
That's why.
Wearing like a wool sweater.
Right.
A sheep wearing its own sweater.
Wool is made from sheep hair. So it's a sheep in wool's
clothing. So what do you think that reference would be? A sheep wearing its own hair?
Well, like you shouldn't be wearing fur that came from you. Like they took it off the sheep and then they put it into wool and now you're wearing the wool's clothing. So you
Yeah, but why would that be bad?
Because it's kind of like cannibalism. You shouldn't be eating yourself. You shouldn't be wearing yourself either.
Okay, so when somebody says
sheep.
When somebody says you're a sheep in wool's clothing, they mean, hey, you shouldn't cannibalize yourself.
Right, or like it's almost like a glass house situation. A sheep in wool's clothing.
Tomorrow we learn shapes.
I guess I'm wrong. Well, what am I getting wrong?
Well, not only is it not a sheep in wool's clothing, like W-O-O-L, it would be a sheep in wolves' clothing, like a wolf, but it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, it's a dangerous thing.
It goes in both directions.
So what's the saying?
I don't think you could say it's a wolf in sheep's... No, it's not a sheep in wolves' clothing.
It's a sheep in wolves' clothing.
No, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. That means it's a dangerous person that's acting really nice. It's dangerous because it's a wolf, but he's dressed up like a sheep, so he's like acting nice to trick you.
I think we're thinking of two different. I never heard that term. I always heard a sheep in wolf's clothing.
Well, no, because your saying isn't a real saying.
Right. So let me half agree with Sean. I have definitely heard sheep in wolf's clothing, meaning it's a gentle thing, like disguised as something more dangerous. You've heard that reverse, DA, which I think is fine. It is definitely not sheep in wool's clothing because it has nothing to do with anything because it makes no sense no matter how Sean wants to slice it up.
But a sheep in wolves' clothing would be something nice that appears to be dangerous. There's not a lot of situations like that. There's a lot of situations that there's like somebody who's like a shark or somebody who's trying to take advantage of you. That would be a wolf in sheep's clothing. They come off as nice and pleasant and friendly, but ultimately they're there to do you harm.
Is wool an actual... Am I getting that right or is it just wolf is the fabric?
Oh, boy.
No, wool is a thing. W O O L. That's
so
a thing.
So I had that right.
But that has nothing to do with this saying.
But is that made from a wolf now or a sheep? Is it wool?
No, it is
from a wolf.
It's made from a sheep. Yes, wool is not made from wolf.
Dad, how could you fault me for that? If a sheep makes clothing and it becomes wool, and then the saying sounds like a sheep in wolves' clothing, how am I that nuts then that you guys are laughing at me?
Because the saying is not what you think it is, because what you're saying and your explanation of it hurt everyone's brain.
Bogus, would you not agree that a wool and a wolf, and then including both into a saying, gets a little confusing? Why not just wolf? Fabric wolf, then.
You'd also not have to even think about what the reference means. Your reference didn't have any real explanation.
Well, just call the fabric sheep, then. It's a sheep in sheep's clothing. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, why even throw in the wool? Why are we changing the name of the fabric? Just call it sheep.
Because the stuff that grows on a sheep is wool. So that's its own thing. The saying is something completely different because it's used, as DA said, to describe something that is dangerous but looks gentle, so it tricks you. So it's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
But why give it that name? Just call it sheep hair. Why call it wool, then? Because it throws everything off.
They expect you to come along and bungle everything. That's why.
Well, why do you think a fish has scales and not fish skin?
Because it needs gills to swim.
Well, you would prefer, though, it's just called fish skin.
Yes. Yeah, if you just said, hey, feel this fish skin. I think I've said it before, too.
Yeah.
Skin should be skin. I understand that the aquatic animals are different because they breathe through them, they're porous and all that. But like if we have hair, everything should just be hair. Like a sheep should have hair. It shouldn't be porous.
You don't understand that either. The fish are not porous. They have three or four gill slits on either side of them.
No.
They don't have water seeping through their entire body.
All right. Whatever. I mean, Bilotti's played us off here. I don't know what more to add to this.
Roll tape.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
So what I do is I start tackling the quarterback unless he get the ball to somebody else, in which case I try to tackle that person.
Say hey. Willie Mays Hayes here. Play like Mays, and I run like Hayes. How you doing?
The greatest sports movies with the greatest sports minds. Kinda.
Either we heal now as a team,
or we will die as individuals.
Get your popcorn ready.
Get your popcorn ready with a DA show.
All right, we are breaking down this week The Sandlot from 1993. A group of kids in 1960s Southern California get together daily to play Sandlot baseball. And the protagonist, the central figure in our film, Smalls, is the new kid to the neighborhood. He gets adopted by this Sandlot team. And he's really an egghead nerd, doesn't have a lot of sports acumen, but he ends up hitting a home run over the fence, and unfortunately that means the day is done because they can't go fetch that baseball. Beyond the fence is a guard dog, an attack dog named Beast, and this Beast has, in rumors, eaten a kid already. So they are scared to go over there, and they also are scared to knock on the door of the neighbor. So now a huge part of the film is getting the ball back, because it happened that Smalls had borrowed that baseball from his stepdad and the ball had been signed by Babe Ruth. Now, number one here, guys, Merez, is it a problem that the Sandlot kids just took a new baseball that Smalls brought and didn't look at it and see that there was an autograph of Babe Ruth on it? Is it partially their responsibility as well that they didn't look close enough to see the autograph?
DA, this is why you're so good at this segment. You ask all the right questions. And I must say, for a pitcher that we know later on that winds up in AAA that is credited with throwing the heater, which seemingly everybody just smacks over the fence, the idea that this pitcher doesn't look down at that baseball and see the signature Babe Ruth before throwing it, it's not as if, by the way, Smalls leads off this practice and it's the first pitch gone for the day. Nobody fielding it, throwing around. Nobody sees the big Babe Ruth signature on the baseball. I mean, these kids are so unattentive. It's ridiculous.
Also, it's a little hard to believe that suddenly Smalls, who can't throw, can't field, doesn't know who Babe Ruth is basically a walking moron, doesn't know what s'mores is.
He's dumber than Sean.
Smashes a home run from a ball from the 1930s over the home run fence for his first home run ever. I mean, boy, he really gets into that one. It goes over the fence, and now they got to try to retrieve it. I've got a real problem with Smalls here, because they go through all of these ways to try to retrieve it, and one of the ways is lowering Yeah down with a rope harness into the Beast's cage, into the yard, and Yeah becomes face-to-face with Beast, and they have to hoist him up quickly before he can really retrieve the baseball. He drops it. Doesn't Smalls have to be the one going in there? Why is Yeah the one being dropped down into this cage, Bogish, to be the Beast's next meal?
I mean, and Smalls is definitely smaller than Yeah, not by a lot. You'd think you'd have to just put the lightest guy in there for everything to work. But to be honest, my criticism here is on Yeah. You've got that ball in your hand. You got to hold on to it.
You do.
And I know the dog is there, and the dog is scary, and it's right in your face. But if that works, if he just doesn't panic, and don't forget, he comes over the fence and does this little, like, finger on the lips, I'm completely a basket case thing going on. So he loses everything. And I get it to a certain extent, but you gotta hold on. It was solved. The ball was in his hand. He came back over the fence. He should have had it with him. So, yeah, why isn't Smalls there? I get it. But more importantly is, how does Yaya drop the ball in that situation?
It's a bad job by Yaya, but Smalls has got to be on that old rope swing there. He's got to be the one that takes the most heat on this. So ultimately, Benny the Jet says, you know what? I've got to do this. He has a dream that he sees Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth challenges him to go do his thing, be great, be a legend. Benny the Jet's like, you know what? I'm hopping this fence. I'm going to get it. Again, Smalls is putting all of his friends in harm's way to go get the baseball that they don't get in trouble. It would be Smalls getting in trouble. And Smalls is the bozo that didn't know who Babe Ruth was. I mean, this is all on Smalls here. So Benny the Jet hops the fence, gets the ball, hops over the fence, but the adventure's not done because the Beast jumps over that fence and now is chasing Benny the Jet through the parks and the streets and fairs and everything. Mraz, Benny's stamina here is absolutely incredible. And this would tell us why he ends up becoming a Major League Baseball player. I would say he must run a minimum of 6 miles over the course of this and does not ever get caught by a dog, a massive dog. You have to give Benny massive credit here.
It's athletic ability too, DA. Look, I've spent a lot of time running and trying to find different ways to work out while gyms have been closed here. And I have now gotten to the point where I could go exactly 9 houses down a street before having to hold the side of my love handle before I cramp up. So picture that. And I've been running now for 3 months. I went from 6 houses to 9 houses before that moment happens. The fact that he could fly around town without stopping, by the way, being able to slide under movie screens, jump over tables, have cakes flip out. I mean, it's not as if there's a straight run either. This is stop and go. This is change of direction. Mm-hmm. He could stop, yell to his teammates there to meet me at the sandlot, take a longer direction back around. It is truly incredible. And we talk about, you know, our friend Tiki Barber training for the marathon, and that's a former athlete, and how much work he had to put in training for the marathon. Benny the Jet, at, you know, 10, 11 years old, was ready to go and ready to run marathons. It's probably one of the most insanely underrated athletic achievements in modern cinematic history, Benny the Jet's run and sprint throughout town. And eventually, by the way, I don't understand the end game of getting back to Sandlot and why he was jumping over the fence anyway.
Didn't make any sense.
That didn't make any sense, but I guess you're delirious when you've ran that long without hydration.
Strategically, it seems like a misfire. He's trying to draw Beast back into the Beast's yard, but the Beast has already proven he can jump back over the fence to come eat you. So I don't know really what that ends up accomplishing, because they didn't know that the wall was going to fall on Beast and nearly kill him. So we then find out that Mr. Myrtle, the owner of the Beast, had played baseball with Babe Ruth. They end up in Mr. Myrtle's house. Mr. Myrtle invites them in. Ends up swapping out the eaten up Babe Ruth ball with a 27 Yankees autographed ball, because apparently Mr. Myrtle had played baseball with Babe Ruth. They show a picture of him next to Babe Ruth. So this is an amazingly heartwarming ending to this story. Mr. Myrtle, who is blind, apparently was hit. He was a great hitter, but he was hit in his head. And as he said, the lights went out, which is relatively terrifying. So he's blind from getting hit by a beanball, I guess. But it's played by James Earl Jones. Guys, when did they cross the color barrier with Babe Ruth? How is it possible that Mr. Myrtle played baseball with Babe Ruth back in the 20s and 30s, decades before Jackie Robinson?
Wow.
Yeah, and I double-checked this. He's in a Pirates uniform in that picture, which means he was in the big leagues. He was not a Negro League player that just happened at some point to cross paths with Ruth and Gehrig. That's who he's flanked by in the picture. So yeah, you're not supposed to recognize those things, Dia. That's us being too smart.
Oh,
they're just trying to sneak that past us.
All these years later, I never picked up on that. What a man, the realism of this movie is out of the world. So now I have to wonder, did Mr. Myrtle lie all along? Did he have that picture photoshopped? Is he living in his own crazy world where he thinks he played baseball? Are those even the 27 Yankees that have signed it? Has he signed all their names himself? This could be a crazy man living behind the sandlot.
Well,
they really should have said he had played in the Negro Leagues and they had like an exhibition game and they got friendly, because let's face it, James Earl Jones cannot play with Babe Ruth in Major League Baseball in the 20s and 30s.
Right.
So then fast forward to where are they now? And Benny the Jet has become a star for the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's great to see. A couple of the other guys, you know, Squints ends up marrying Wendy Peppercorn. Good for him. I don't see how that happens, but fine. Good for him.
Owns the drugstore, too.
The two brothers end up making strip malls, okay. And then you have Smalls. Okay, Smalls ends up becoming the voice of the Dodgers. And I have to imagine on radio only, because Vin Scully is there doing TV. I had thought that Vin was doing simulcasts, but all right, I guess it's radio only. Smalls is calling a Benny the Jet game, stealing home. He's wearing a denim shirt and a baseball cap. Hey, can you dress up? You're the voice of the Dodgers, Smalls. Okay, Vin Scully's a booth over in a three-piece suit. Vin's probably in a tuxedo, and you got a denim button-down and a baseball hat on? I'm sorry. I know I kill you, Mraz, for not dressing up for the show. I got more problems with the voice of the Dodgers wearing a baseball cap with a fish on it from the 1960s as he's calling baseball games.
Yeah, I thought of you right away when I saw this happen. And honestly, the tie at that point that he's wearing is almost an insult.
Exactly.
It's almost like spitting in the face.
It really is.
Because that's not even a shirt or an outfit you wear a tie with.
No.
It's like, oh, you want me to wear a tie? Here's how I'm going to dress up and wear a tie. And you're right about that cap. It's the same cap that Benny told him at 10 years old to burn. It's not a baseball cap. You've now moved on. You probably have a million nice hats, even if you want to wear a hat. Stop with the stupid old fishing hat. The insult, the shirt, the pants, the whole look. It's a joke. It's a total joke the way he showed up for Dodger games. I wouldn't even do that.
Guys, you can have the crappy outfit. It's inexcusable to me that, again, once again, another announcer is not wearing headphones.
No,
he gets
headphones.
Up and walks away from the microphone while he's screaming about Ben Jessling home plate. And
it's disgraceful.
He has also turned this press box into his den.
There's
pictures and trophies. Not even Vin Scully sets up shop like that in Dodger Stadium.
So
he basically built the place.
It's so true. I was so annoyed by Smalls the entire movie that the coup de grace was at the end. The way he handles those Dodgers broadcasts, I had a real problem with. Now, we find out where all these kids are. Now, as I mentioned, a couple of them. De Nunez ends up in AAA. That's great. Tommy and Timmy Timmons, they end up making a bunch of strip malls. You had who invents bungee jumping or whatever. All great. And then, guys, they get to one of the players here.
Bertrand,
and they say he, quote, got lost to the 60s. Now, this is a really scary kind of foreboding thing. He just disappears, and they say he got lost to the 60s. Well, does this mean he gets lost in LSD as a hippie? Does this mean he gets enlisted into the Vietnam War and dies? What happens to Bertram, who gets lost to the 60s?
My guess would be drug use, alcohol, kind of joins the hippie movement, and they never see him again.
Love.
Let's not forget, Bertrand's the same guy who somehow at 10, 11 years old gets his hand on some Big Chief tobacco. So
there
are some early signs, warning signs of Bertrand that perhaps drug dealing could be in his future. Knows the wrong people to begin with to get his hands on stuff. So they set motion early that's the kind of guy if you're going to lose touch with, because he went down a dark path. Bertrand, the early signs were there.
It's also 1962, and he's 10 or 11, so to get lost in the 60s, he's getting lost at, like, 16, 17.
Yeah.
So, like, he went off the deep end in a hurry in life.
Yeah.
Nothing good about that.
No, and that's pretty terrifying, because Bertram also had the great classic retro Los Angeles Angels hat, and you just hate to see it. You hate to see it. You know, Bertram seemed like a good guy, but
he still
give them all Big Chief Chew.
Think about it. If he didn't get lost in the 60s, he's probably an elderly season ticket holder to watch Mike Trout today. Instead, he was popping LSD, and we're assuming he's not alive anymore.
Lost to the 60s.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, so today we ask you guys, when he retires, will Mraz gain more than 50 pounds in retirement. Neither Twitter nor Facebook users had much faith in Mraz. An astounding 87% of you on Facebook said yes. On Twitter, even more, 89%. So nearly 9 out of every 10 listeners felt that Mraz would gain at least 50 pounds in retirement, which would put Mraz at a cool 300 plus if he just stays at this weight he is now, which is unlikely. So you're thinking that Mraz is going to be like 325, 350 when he retires? Wow, no faith. A study from the Institute for Health Policy found that retirement is connected to, quote, modest weight gain, probably 2 to 4 pounds per person. You're saying 50 or more for Mraz. Coming in, Mraz right now, 5'11", 260, has a BMI of 34.9.
What?
A BMI of 30 is considered obese. So
wait,
Mraz
is
34.9.
So I'm obese?
Sounds like it.
I honestly didn't know. I'm like, when you think obese, I don't think me. I know I'm a little husky. I could stand to lose a few, but obese? Oh.
That's from Advanced Analytics, so you can take up the math of cap on this one. But he says 5'11", 260 is a BMI of 34.9, and 30 or greater is considered obese.
I just smashed an Oreo on top of peanut butter on top of rice cake, too, so that's probably not helping.
Your epic fail, a sheep in wool's clothing.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Right, that's the other thing. So sheep we use for wool, right? A sheep in wool's clothing, we've heard that. And now nope. We don't use goat. So we don't use
that.
The goat for the hair. No, we just use the goat for the milk and the cheese.
Did so you say it's a sheep in wolves clothing?
No, a sheep in wool's clothing. Wool.
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 Yeah. Oh,
wool.
Got it.
That's why.
Wearing like a wool sweater.
Right.
A sheep wearing its own sweater.
Wool is made from sheep hair. So it's a sheep in wool's
clothing. Yeah, so what do you think that reference would be? A sheep wearing its own hair.
Like you shouldn't be wearing fur that came from you. Like they took it off the sheep and then they put it into wool and now you're wearing the wool's clothing. So you
Yeah, but why would that be bad?
Because it's kind of like cannibalism. You shouldn't be eating yourself. You shouldn't be wearing yourself either.
Well, not only is it not a sheep in wool's clothing, like W-O-O-L, it would be a sheep in wolves' clothing, like a wolf, but it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, it's a dangerous thing.
Both directions.
So what's the saying?
I don't think you could say it's a wolf in sheep's... No, it's not a sheep in wolves' clothing.
It's a sheep in wolves' clothing.
No, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing. That means it's a dangerous person that's acting really nice. It's... Wool is a thing. W-O-O-L. That's
so
a thing.
So I had that right.
But that has
that
nothing to do with this saying.
But is that made from a wolf now or a sheep? Is it wool
oh, no, it
made
is.
From a wolf?
It's made from a sheep, yes. Wool
well,
is not
see,
made from wolf.
Dad, how could you fault me for that? If a sheep makes clothing and it becomes wool, and then the saying sounds like a sheep in wolf's clothing, how am I that nuts then that you guys are laughing at me?
Means. Your reference didn't have any real explanation.
Well, just call the fabric sheep then. It's a sheep in sheep's clothing. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Like, why even throw in the wool? Why are we changing the name of the fabric? Just call it sheep.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Our toll-free line today was sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. And today's question of the day is, what is the saying, sheep in wolves' clothing or wolves in sheep's clothing? Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. It's a biblical term that is a sheep in wolves' clothing. No, a wolf in... Yes, a wolf in sheep's clothing. You see that? You hang around Mraz long enough, you become stupider. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Body Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel. Connor Green, your associate producer. Andrew Bogish, your anchor today on Headlines. And Andrew Kaplan as well on Watch DA. I'm off today and tomorrow and Friday. Enjoy Bogues and Mraz, who will be filling in for me the next couple of days. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.